she was only 15. She came by the office. She tried to compose herself. She was a bus kid, but a bus kid whom I knew and knew rather well. She was a kind of, are you listening to me, sailors? She was the kind of young lady who was easy to know. She had grown up on our buses. I think, if I remember correctly, she started coming about the age 5 on our buses. She came in my office and very timidly, at the age of 15, perhaps 16, but I think 15, she said, Brother Hiles, I'm going to break your heart. I think I knew what she was going to say. I think I knew. She then proceeded to say, Brother Hiles, I'm pregnant. And I bowed my head and began to weep. For she was a very special girl to me. I had tried to be her adopted dad, unofficially her adopted dad. And I was heartbroken. I told her I'd meet with her every Saturday evening about 6 o'clock. And I did until the 9 months was over. I contacted some ladies in our church and I asked them if they would help in picking out some maternity clothes, and some even decided to make some for her, and I helped to buy the material. In some cases, I had someone take her shopping. Let her know they love her. I'm not going to turn my back on anybody who wants help. And so she got about 7-8 months along, looked a little bit like I look now. And I told her, I said, I've got a job for you. She was so happy. She said, somebody would hire me. I said, oh, yes. I said, playing left tackle for the Chicago Bears. And then, of course, the day came when the baby came. And the baby was given up for adoption, as I always recommend. I say, as I always recommend. I never recommend a little teenage girl to keep a baby. Teenage girl's got some growing up yet to do. She needs to go back to school and get educated. She doesn't need to have to give a baby a home without a mother and a father. And so I found a good home and placed that baby in a lovely home. And that was the thing she did. But occasionally, she would come by my office and she would ask about the girl. She did not know who had her, as far as I know, and she'd ask about the girl. And I would tell her how she was doing. On one particular day, she came by, and she said, as she almost always asked, she said, Brother Hiles, how's the girl? And the girl is getting up now, five or six years old. And she'd come by once every couple of months to ask me how her daughter was doing that she had not seen since she gave birth to her. She said one day, she said, Brother Hiles, what color is her hair? And I said, it's sort of a between a blonde and a brown. And she said, what color are her eyes? I think I said blue. She said, is she tall, thin? What size is she? And I told her, I said, she's rather tall and she's a beautiful young lady. And then I said, she said, is she a good girl? And I said, yes, she is a good girl, and you'll be very proud of her if you knew her. And then I said, I've got some good news for you. And she said, what's that? I said, she got saved and baptized last Sunday. And a tear rolled down her cheek, and she quivered her lips, and she said, and I'm quoting, she said, all for 5 minutes of fun. All for 5 minutes of fun. A man sat in a wheelchair. A young man walked by. The man in the wheelchair was a middle-aged man. He said, young man, come here. Young man walked over and he said, young man, let me ask you a question. He said, I've been in a wheelchair for many, many years. He said, all for 5 minutes of pleasure. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? I had a preacher friend one time who lost his temper in the pulpit, and in a fit of temper resigned his church. Never again reached the place in his ministry where he was before. And he said to me, he said, I lost my temper for about 5 minutes. and my whole ministry was changed. I know a young lady years ago who went on a senior trip. I mean Hammond Baptist High School senior trip. And that year they went on a little cruise from Miami, I think, over to Nassau. And there was somebody who worked on the ship that lured her down below the main deck. And in just a few minutes, a terrible thing happened. And she got pregnant. I said, how long were you down there? And she said, no longer than 5 minutes. Do you know that most of the decisions of your life and most of the directions of your life will be determined by what you do in a few little 5 minute periods in your life? There are certain times in your life, young people, adults, college students, teenagers, there are certain times in your life that are crisis times. They are pivotal times. And those times usually don't last over 5 minutes. Now what you do in those times will determine whether or not you're like that little girl, teenage girl I mentioned a while ago, who's lived a life without her baby, wondering where she is, what does she look like, wondering if she's healthy, wondering if she's a good girl, or she spends her life with her child and gets to rear her child. Now, there'll come times in your life, most of the tragedies of your life take place in less than 5 minutes. Most of the things that determine where you're going to go in the happy side of life or the remorseful road will be determined by a little segment that'll last about 5 minutes. So it was in the life of Esau. One day I decided to buy the biggest bowl of soup I could find at a certain restaurant. It was hot. It was thick. And I bought it. And so I set a timer on my watch. I decided to see how long it'd take me to eat the biggest, thickest bowl of soup, hottest bowl of soup I could find. I did not know how long it'd take. Put my watch over here, and I started eating the soup. When I finished with the bowl of soup, a couple of crackers, I picked up my watch, and it had been almost exactly 5 minutes. That's about how long it took Esau to eat the bowl of soup. May I tell you what he traded for that bowl of soup? For 5 minutes, he traded his birthright. Now, what did that mean? In the first place, it meant he traded the right to have a double portion of his father's inheritance. Are you listening to me? In the second place, it meant that he traded his priestly rights. In other words, in those days, worship was conducted by family. I mean, big family, like father, mother, grandchildren, uncles, aunts, an entire family group of hundreds of people, and Esau was in line to be the pastor, if you please, or have the priestly rights of that family. He traded not only the double portion of his father's inheritance, but he also traded the privilege of having the priestly rights for his family, all for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Not only that, but he traded the right in the birthright was the privilege of being of carrying the seed in the lineage and genealogy of the coming Messiah. I mean, the Messiah himself could have come from the loins of Esau, and he could have been a seed carrier of the coming Messiah. He traded a double portion of his father's inheritance. He traded the priestly rights to the entire big family. He traded the right to be in the genealogy of the Messiah. And he also traded the right to be the father of Israel. For his brother Jacob, who got the birthright, his name was changed to Israel, and they've been called the Israelites ever since. Nation Israel. Esau, they could have been called the nation of Esau. And they could be the children of Esau, or the Esauites to this day. Now listen to me. For 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, he traded, he lost, he paid for that fund, for pleasure, a double portion of the inheritance, the priestly rights of the family, the right to carry the seed of the Messiah, and he traded the right
to be the head of a nation, and also, for 5 minutes, the much of the problem that's been going on in the Middle East in the last few months, and for that matter, for the last three or four thousand years, is caused by 5 minutes. 5 minutes. I wonder what you're going to trade for 5 minutes. I wonder what you're going to give for 5 minutes. Are you going to give your purity for 5 minutes of fun? Are you going to give your future, right, to have a happy marriage and home for 5 minutes of fun? Are you going to give your health for a lifetime for 5 minutes of fun? Esau, all of this for 5 minutes. I wonder how many times Esau thought about that. I wonder how many times when a wild nation came from his loins. I wonder how many times when he saw the blessings of God upon Jacob. And when he finally got right with God in his latter years, I wonder how many times he did this and hit himself in the head and did like this and said, "Oh, my soul, all I've lost for 5 minutes." Listen, the devil is trying to get you. And the devil won't get you, most of you, to premeditate sin. He won't get most of you to plan the evil that you do. He'll get you in 5 little minutes. There are young ladies in this room tonight who lost your virtue and your chastity and virginity in 5 minutes of passion. There are men tonight in this room who have fathered children because of 5 minutes of fun. I want to tell you something. The devil's a crook. He's a liar. I mean, he'll always win the bargain. 5 minutes. Not to mention David, who in less than 5 minutes lost his kingdom. Not to mention Cain, who in less than 5 minutes lost his right to be the main seed carrier of the Messiah. Not to mention Judas Iscariot, who in less than 5 minutes sold his Savior for 30 pieces of silver, and is mentioned always in a negative way to this day. Let me show you tonight two scenes. In one of these, I'm going through a little routine I've done many times, but I want to show you two scenes tonight. Scene number one: young man comes home from work. His wife has a sheepish look on her face. She says, "Honey, I went to the doctor today." He said, "What do you have? The flu?" And she grinned and said, "I've got the 9 month flu." He said, "You mean you're she said, "No, I mean we're. And then came a wonderful, wonderful time while waiting. She became hard to get along with. No, she became harder to get along with. And was out of sorts an awful lot. And her stomach said to her, "Here every morning, there's more room in the world than there is in me." And she regurgitated, and sometimes she even vomited, and a few times she even puked. She got hungry for the strangest things. I mean, always at 2 o'clock in the morning, she got hungry for peanut butter between two slices of watermelon. Or she got hungry for poached eggs covered with K.O. syrup. And she got the strangest little patches on her face. She was ugly. And she got fat. When she got so fat, when she laid on her stomach, she looked like a rocker on a rocking chair. Laid on her back, she looked like Pike's Peak. Laid on her side, she fell off on the floor. And then, one night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, because all babies who are normal are born in the wee hours of the morning. I've told you time and time, it's scientifically proved. Brother Colston was born at noon, I was born at 1 o'clock in the morning. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, she reached over and said, "Honey." He reached over and said, "What?" And she said, "My pains are about 4 minutes apart." And he said, "Now you, the, but our, we, us, I, me, the, you, you, don't panic." And she said, "Thank you for your calm assurance." He said, "Now thee, but you are we? There's a you go to the car. I'll get the suitcase." So he went and got the bowling ball and took it out to the car. And you know him. She knew him very well. So she got the suitcase and she met him at the car. He backed out of the driveway, took off 80 miles an hour in a 30 mile zone, and looked up in the rearview mirror and he saw a flashing light and a siren. He pulls over side the road. And the policeman comes over and says, "Hey, bud, where do you think you're going? To a fire?" And he said, "No, Ossifer. It's my hospital here. She's going to the baby to have a wife. I mean, it's my baby here. She's going to the wife to have a hospital." And the Ossifer said, "I think I understand. You just follow me." And so the Ossifer got in his car, and he led with a flashing light and a siren. He led the couple to the airport. That's the only place I go. And so, all four of our kids born to the airport. But anyway, they got to the hospital, and they put the little lady in what they call a labor room. And in the days when we were young, fathers never went to the delivery room. Bless God, I'd have passed out four times for sure. And they put the father in the waiting room. And there they showed sex discrimination. They did everything they could to make that woman comfortable. Forgot the guy was even out there. And then they put her in a delivery room. And then there was some ether and suffering like nobody ever suffers. And then a little cry. Then they put the lady back, put her in the hospital room, and the fellow came and he kissed her on the brow. Don't kiss her in the mouth, you'll pass out. Now, I'm not wrong kissing her in the mouth, but I mean with the ether, you'll pass out. And, there's something wrong with kissing in the mouth if you're not married. I mean, I'm in all kinds of trouble right now. I don't know how to get out of it. But anyway, then there is a knock on the door. And the nurse said, "You have company." And she was standing there holding a little package under a dirty handkerchief. I'll preach the sermon, fellas. And she brought the baby over and laid that baby in mother's lap, and mother pulled back the blanket. "Ugly good night. Looked like a peach been the summer on the ground in the summertime for 2 months." And all of a sudden, there was the blending of love. And the father tried to say thank you to the mother. The mother knew what it was for the first time to have joined in love with her husband to bring forth a never-dying soul. That's one side of the story. May I go to the other side? She's not married. She's worried. There are signs she might be pregnant. For 5 minutes of fun. It's not worth it, kids. It's not worth it, kids. Not worth it. 5 minutes of fun. And then all of a sudden she has the test, pregnancy test, and it's positive. When will she tell her mother? How can she tell her mother? When will she tell her father? How can she tell her father? But there comes a time when it becomes too obvious. She's getting larger. It's too obvious. Something's got to be done. And so she goes in and says, "Mom and Dad, or Mama, could I talk to you, please? I've been through this with
as a pastor with families hundreds of times in these years, I don't know a sadder picture in my life. And the mother who loves her says to her, "Honey, I'm sorry and I'm crushed, but you're still my daughter." The time to warn people about sins before they do it. Take out the white flag and say, "Don't do it! Don't do it! It's wicked! Movies are wicked! And the television prime time programs are wicked! And mixed bathing is wicked! And wearing your shorts in public to tempt the lust of men is wicked! And filthy talk is wicked! And don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it!" But when they do it, and there's nothing you can do about it, love takes over. Let's go talk to Brother Hyle. "Mother, I don't want to talk to Brother Hiles. He'll be mad." She's judging that with the way I preach. They come in. The mother says, "You tell him, honey." And she said, "Brother Hiles, I'm pregnant. And I'll weep a while. In some cases, I've been the only pastor they've ever had. In some cases, they've come for the best families in this room. I mean that. And I still think they're the best families in this room. And then, what shall we do?" There are the moments of waiting. There's no husband to share with. There's no layette. There's no shower. Maybe if you come to church at all, you sit back in the back somewhere and you tiptoe in after it starts and you tiptoe out before it's over because you're too embarrassed to let folks see you. Or maybe you've been shipped down to Grandma's house or Aunt Susie's house, live down there till the baby comes and folks wonder where you are, but you're trying to keep it a secret. You've moved for a while or something, and then there comes the labor pain, and there's no husband, and there's nobody to take you to the hospital, and there's nobody to walk outside the room, and there's nobody to kiss you, there's nobody to say, "I'm proud of you," there's nobody to say, "Aren't we happy?" And the baby comes, there's nobody to say, "That's our baby," there's nobody. All for 5 minutes. You made a bad bargain. I'm not here to scold you who've made a bad bargain and sold all of those things for 5 minutes. I'm here to say, you bus kids over here, don't you sell your future for 5 minutes of fun. I'm here to say to you public school kids over here, don't you sell your future for 5 minutes of fun. I'm here to say to all of our First Baptist young people here, don't you sell your future for 5 minutes of fun. I'm here to say to Howells Anderson College students, don't you sell your future for 5 minutes of fun. I'm saying if some guy wants to put his dirty paws on you, take off your high-heeled shoe and knock him in the head with it and spit on his face and walk off and go home. I'm simply saying he doesn't love you. He's not concerned about you. He doesn't care about you. He wants for 5 minutes of pleasure for the tingling of a bodily gland or two. He wants to take everything that's holy and decent and right and strip you of your future and your joy and your marriage and your home. You tell him, "No, sir, I'm a Christian. I'm not going to live like that. I'm not going to sell my whole future for 5 minutes." For 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Scene two. Time to go home. First picture. It's a welcome sign on the door. Welcome home. Listen to me. Welcome home, sweetheart. The neighbors have come. Perhaps they brought some food. And there's the little layette all ready for the baby. Because the shower was so nice. And in a week or two, you take that little baby and put it in the church nursery. And they put that baby as the newest one right there in the front so everybody can see it. And then daddy and mama walk up and look at it and say, "That's the one. That's the one." I've got to tell you my favorite story about that now. I hadn't got a thing to do with the sermon. But I've got to tell you my favorite story. You know it. You've heard it on every first and third Sunday for 31 years. But I'm going to say it again. We had a couple in our church in Texas, Chinese couple. Their name was Wong. Shut up. Wait till I get there. Name was Wong. They had a baby.
I took my assistant pastor, Bob Keyes, to the maternity ward. Boy, they were showing it off. You know that little window there where you hold a little card up, you know, and like that? And then, nah, not there. All of them look as ugly as the other ones. So Mr. Wong's baby was there. He said, that's mine right there in that line. I said, Mr. Wong, does he have jaundice? Oh, no, Pastor, he's normal. Mr. Wong, there's something wrong with him. He's yellow. And Mr. Wong said, Pastor, two Wongs don't make a white. Quack, 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 quack. Now, that's one side. The maternity ward. The happy father. The flowers sent in. The grandmother and grandfather come in to see their new grandchild. And the friends and neighbors come to see the little baby. That's one side. Now come with me to the other side. The baby is held in the arms of Mama. Mama's in a wheelchair. She has a little one to whom she just gave life and entered the jaws of death herself to give that life. She's rolled to the front door. Somebody she's never seen is there. She doesn't know where they live. She takes that little baby and hands that baby, listen to me, hands that baby to somebody she'll never see. And goes home with nobody to comfort her and nobody to care. All for 5 minutes of fun. It's not worth it, kids. It's not worth it. Every young lady in this room tonight has a right to walk down this aisle as a lovely bride, clean and pure and chaste, and give herself to the guy that God chooses for her. Every young lady has that right. Don't sell it for 5 minutes. Every young lady has a perfect right to have a husband with her while she's expecting her baby, and to go to the hospital, have a normal delivery. You have a right to have a baby shower. You have a right to have a lay-in at home. You have a right to have all the joy and the excitement of a new baby. You have a right to put your baby in the nursery and be proud of it. Don't sell it for 5 minutes. 5 minutes, Esau. 5 minutes. That's all it took. Eat that bowl of soup. Lost his birthright. Lost his double portion inheritance. Lost his priestly rights to pastor the family. Lost his right to carry the seed of the Messiah. Lost his right to be a blessing to history and to head a nation. And instead of heading the nation of Israel, as was his right, he headed a wild nation called the Edomites that are causing trouble tonight and have ever since Esau lived. Why? Why? Because he plotted for months to sin? No. Because he decided for a period of months to do wrong? No. Because he did wrong and wrong and wrong? No! 5 minutes! 5 minutes. Next scene. He takes his first step. No baby takes the first step. Just takes him longer to fall than it used to. Hey, he took his first step. He didn't. He just stumbled a little longer. That's over here. Over here, I wonder where he is. Either that, or if you kept the child, I wonder how I can feed him. I'll go down to the welfare and stand in line. I'll see if I can get food stamps. And young lady, while you're supposed to be a cheerleader in high school, and while you're supposed to be going to youth activities at the church, and while you're supposed to be in the high school department in the Sunday school, there you are confined to a little one-room place somewhere. You can't work because you're tied down with a baby. You don't have a husband to support you. And you're a misfit. And you're a parasite on society. And you sit there in that little room. And while the kids are having fun at the high school, and they're cheering at basketball games, and they're having fun at youth activities, you're confined there to a little baby somewhere. All for 5 minutes. I say it again. It's not worth it. Then there's the first word. Every baby says the same word first. Daddy. It's pronounced sort of mama, but we all know what it is. It's daddy. What a happy time. Then there's the first tooth. That's over here. Over here. I wonder if he can talk yet. Has he taken his first step yet? Not to mention the father of that child, even if the mother keeps the child. I can tell you of a dozen young men right now who have boys or children 10, 15 years of age that they fathered outside of wedlock. Young people I've pastored, they've never seen their child. A teenage boy somewhere in high school, they've never seen. Never saw him enroll in school. Never went to a school play. Never went to a school athletic contest. Where is he? Wonder what he looks like. Wonder if he's happy. Wonder if he's a good boy. And they live the rest of their lives wondering and wondering and wondering. Why? Because of a bad investment of 5 minutes of fun. I'm not saying it isn't fun. I'm not saying that for you to reach over and put your hand on the neck of that little lady and stroke her hair or rub her soft face is not fun. I'm not saying that it's not fun for you to place your lips against hers. I'm not saying it's not fun for you to have a bodily embrace. I'm not saying it's not fun for you to enter into a physical relationship with her. I'm not saying it's not fun, but I'm saying it's not worth it. You give up 20 years of fun for 5 minutes of fun. You give up 20 years of joy and happiness and peace and a clear conscience for 5 minutes of fun. Next scene. It's time to enroll in school. Over here, you got a dad taking a picture. As the you know how the first child is. You don't care. Time you've had four, you don't give a flip. Why, when Becky was born, I fed her every night myself. If she cried, fed her myself. Mrs. Hiles refused to do it. But I'd get up, and she was on a formula, and I'd get up, and I'd get a pan, and put some warm water in that pan, put that pan on the stove. And then I'd take that bottle of milk and I'd put it in the pan. And as the water got warm, it warmed the bottle and the milk in the bottle. And then I'd look at it and see if it's okay, and then I'd put it on my arm like that to be sure it was okay. And it was okay. I'd sit in a chair and I'd rock Becky and give her her bottle. Cindy came along, fourth kid. She cries in the middle of the night. I get up. Get a cold bottle. Put it on a pillow beside her bed. Stick it in her mouth. Go back to sleep. That's why Cindy's a puny to this day. Now comes the first day to school. Over here you've got a daddy taking pictures. Over here you have a happy mother and father. A waving goodbye to the child in tears of delight and yet sadness as you wave goodbye. You fill out the application to school. Mother, a father's name, father's age. Over here. Father, well, he doesn't live with us. You divorced? No. Oh, I think I know. Not to mention when the child gets saved. Not to mention school programs. Not to mention graduation where no daddy is there. Not to mention a wedding day for that child when daddy is not there. Not to mention the fact that daddy wonders if the child is married. Or for that matter, he may wonder if the child's still alive. Or if he knows about the wedding, he wishes he could go. Now, Let's suppose you've had your baby and you want to date. May I ask you a question? How many people are looking for a wife with an illegitimate child? Now, there are some who are. And I'm not against that at all. But I want to warn you, not many young men, you say, could I take you out? Could I take you out and I'd like to have a date with you? You say, could I bring my 5-year-old daughter? Your what? My 5-year-old daughter. Now you listen to me. Brother Howes is not mad at you. And Brother Howes doesn't want to hurt you. And some of you folks hiding back in the dark ought to sit up and listen to what I'm saying tonight. Some of you punkles ought to listen for change. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm trying to beat some sense in your head and trying to get you to realize, listen, young people, listen. This ain't no time to cut up and laugh. You listen to me. 5 minutes. Esau, you're a fool. David, you're a fool. Cain, you're a fool. Young person, you're a fool. 5 minutes of fun. Let's go a step further. Suppose you marry him. May I tell you what usually happens? Or if you marry the wrong fella, that's how it usually happens. And by the way, I'm not talking about what I think. I'm talking about what I know. And I'm not talking about one case. I'm talking about practically every case. You marry that guy because he's cute. You marry that girl because she's cute. That's the sorriest reason in the world to marry anybody. First place, they don't stay cute. I've told you before, there was a day when I was cute. I'm simply saying what happens. I know. Listen, I know what I'm talking about. And it's time some of you rascals listen to what Brother Howes is preaching up here. One night, this cute kid that you married because of 5 minutes of fun, he doesn't come home for supper. I could close my eyes and point anywhere in this building and be within an inch off of somebody whose illustration this is right here. You wonder where he is. He says he had to work late. He doesn't come home again. After a while, he doesn't pay the rent. Now, I won't tell you what he's going to do. He's going to make you face the landlord. The punk's not going to face the landlord himself. First place, he doesn't care. He's got some hussy. 2 or 3 hussies. He's going to a tavern at night. And then he says to you, well, I stopped by the tavern, but that's all. Ha, 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 ha. Funny, 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 funny. If you all you wanted something to drink, you could stop by the grocery store on the way home. Well, my husband, he's faithful to me, and he's a good husband, but he does stop by for about 4 hours at the tavern. Big deal. Listen, bozo, you may be deceiving that pretty little gal at home, but you're not fooling Brother Hiles. And there she says, I said this last night. Now you listen to me. Don't you marry a woman unless you're going to take care of that woman. I said last night to class here, I said there are obligations in life, and you have no right to accept the privileges of anything without the obligations that go along with it. And then she comes by to see Brother Hiles. She said, Brother Hiles, we're three months behind on the rent. My husband's left me. He says he'll bring me by some money as soon as he can. And then there's a separation. And there she sits. Listen to me. Hey, you talked enough tonight. I'm not kidding. Maybe funny to you. It's not funny, these poor little gals I'm talking about right now. And there she sits. Bound! But listen, hey, young people, listen to me. I'm not kidding, young lady. Sit up straight. Wipe that grin off your face and listen to what I'm saying. Go ahead and marry one of the punks. Go ahead and laugh at the preacher. Let me tell you something. There are a heap of women tonight who are dying 1,000 deaths because they laughed at what the preacher said. preaching what I read in the book. I'm preaching what I've seen for 44 years of preaching. I don't know what I'm talking about. 5 minutes of fun. A life wrecked.
And then the papers are served. By the way, get mad at me if you want to. I'd rather you get mad at me for preaching the truth than like me for pussyfooting.
I'm in no popularity contest. I'm in a truth-telling contest. I'm in a life-saving contest. I'm in a home-saving contest.
There she is alone. By herself. Let me be vain for a minute. I worry about what would happen if I were taken. Because these little ladies that face that know they have a friend in Brother Hines. Right in the middle of pastor school. Got a little note. One of our ladies has been through the same thing. Bring her kids by herself. And she simply said, "Dear Brother Hines, thank you for helping pick up the pieces and putting them back together in my life." 5 minutes. She's along with the children. Where will she live? How will she pay the rent? She'll get a job. It'll cost her as much to get a babysitter as she'll make in her job. What can she do? Not much she can do. For 5 minutes. Listen carefully and I'm through. In every life, there are a few 5 minutes that chart that life. That night, I surrendered to preach. When I walked in the Hillcrest Baptist Church and the invitation started, I had not one idea that I'd ever be a preacher. Within 5 minutes, I surrendered my life to preach the gospel. And now for all these 40-some-odd years, my life has been directed and guided by a decision made in 5 minutes. I get a little weary of folks. Now, don't make a hasty decision. Practically every decision you make in life must be pretty hasty. That night at the Texas Theater, we were parked out in front. Three couples. I had a blind date. There ain't nothing sacred to you folks here. Nothing sacred. A blind date means that somebody asked me if I'd have a date with this girl so they could have three couples. Of course, I had 50 offers for that same night. But I told the fellas I couldn't play ball. And I was sitting in the back seat of a car behind the driver, parked in front of the same theater where Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly shot President Kennedy. And a bottle of whiskey was opened by the driver of the car, and he drank from it and passed it to his date beside him. She drank from it and passed it to the young lady beside her in the front seat. She drank from it and passed it to her date behind her. He drank from it and passed it to my date in the middle of the back seat. She drank from it and gave it to me. For the first time in my life, I held in my hands a bottle of whiskey. I didn't want to be different. And by the way, young people, you ought never put yourself in any position where you've got to be different to do right. And I want to say this. What I did won't happen one time in 100. Don't you think you're going to do it? And I pulled that whiskey to my lips and I got it within an inch of my lips and I felt like a dagger, a sword had pierced my breast. Pain shot through my chest. And I tossed that whiskey up in the air and it spilled over everybody in the car. And I said, "Take me home. Take me home." "Does little Lord Fauntleroy want to go home to knit or embroider?" said the driver. I said, "Never mind, just take me home." 5 minutes. 5 minutes determined whether I'd be behind this pulpit tonight or not. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Hey, 5 minutes determined whether there would be a Howells Anderson College or not. That night, when a 17-year-old boy
was out with the wrong crowd. 5 minutes. Determine whether it be a public school ministry or a bus ministry or a sailor ministry. And the truth is, 50% of the people in this room tonight probably would have died and gone to hell someday, depending upon what decision I made in that 5 minutes. I would have aborted hundreds of thousands of new births. 5 minutes. That senior day. Don't tell about it much anymore. I should probably to our young people. That senior day when I was graduating from high school, and I had a date with Peggy Rinder, and my best friend Richard Newton had a date with B. Tate, and Richard's dad was a deacon in a fine Baptist church. Peggy was one of the finest young girls in our church where I attended. We had senior day on Sunday. Used to have baccalaureate services in the old days. Had a baccalaureate service at Cliff Temple Baptist Church. After that was over, we went out to eat a bite. Went to Mary and Margaret Mayer's house for open house in the afternoon. Got about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and Richard said, "Now, Jack, where will we go? What will we do tonight?" And I said, "Well, you know what we'll do. We'll go to church." He said, "Church! Church!" Well, I said, "Of course." "Why?" He said, "This is our senior day." I said, "But it's also Sunday." He said, "Jack, we had in mind going to a nightclub tonight." I said, "Richard, you wouldn't know what to do in a nightclub. Listen to me, you wouldn't know what to do in a nightclub. I mean, your dad's a deacon. We've grown up in church. You know better than that." He said, "But Jack, this is our senior day." "I don't care what day it is, you're supposed to do right every day and every night." And Peggy looked at me and she said, "What kind of a dud did I draw?" And I said, "You knew what kind of dud you drew. You and I have grown up together in the Hillcrest Baptist Church from our junior high days, and you know what I stand for, and I know what you stood for, Peggy, and you know we ought to go to church tonight." And she said, "Hiles," she said, "that's silly." She said, "Least we can do is go to a movie, a drive-in movie." And I said, "I'm going to church." And Richard said, "Okay," and B. Tate said, "Okay, we'll take you home." And they did. And I called Mrs. Rinder and told her that Peggy, I was no longer responsible for Peggy. And she cried on the telephone and she said, "I'm so proud of you, Jack." And I went to church that night. I walked in, my mother sat there and she saw me coming in. And somebody wrote a little note to my preacher and said to my preacher, "Jack Hiles came to church tonight instead of going to a movie with his date." And my pastor got up and read my name and had me stand up, and they gave me a standing ovation. I don't know how much fun they had at the movie, but they didn't have as much fun as I had at church that night. And I saw my mama's face of pride and joy when I saw my preacher proud of his young member when those people stood up and gave me a standing ovation. All I'm trying to say is 5 minutes. Hey, I was out in Southern California 17 years later preaching in Southern California. I was sitting on the platform and I got a note that said, "Call Richard Newton." That's my buddy, my friend. Richard Newton had gone to Hollywood. By the way, they did go to the drive-in movie that night. Richard Newton had become an actor, starred in the senior play in our high school. Went to SMU and studied acting. Went on to Hollywood, became a movie performer. Later on, a producer. I picked up this note and it said, "Richard Newton called." I called him. He always called me Jack Ladd. Jack Ladd. It's our little deal. I said, "Hey, little Newt." Called him little Newt. And I said, "Hey, little Newt." And he said, "Hey, Jack Ladd." He said, "Let's have lunch tomorrow." Next day I borrowed an old Plymouth about 155 years old. You didn't drive it, you rode the crazy thing. Multicolored. Looked like Joseph's Plymouth of many colors. I met Richard in front of a little shopping center. I got there. He was sitting there smoking on a pipe, sitting in a black Cadillac car. And I rode my old Plymouth up there, you know. He shook his head like that. We had a bite to eat. We tried to talk, but we couldn't talk. We had nothing in common.
Finally, after a while, he looked at me and said, Jack, he said, we may as well just go ahead and go back. And we did, and I went to my room. I jumped up and down on the bed. We chose. He decided to go to the movie that night. I decided to go to church. I spent my life, these 44 years in church. He spent his life, these 44 years, in a hellhole called Hollywood. 5 minutes! 5 minutes! 5 minutes! And you can wreck a life and chart a destiny. That night at Grange Hall Baptist Church, when I'd made 5 decisions in less than 5 minutes. That day at the Gaston Cafeteria in Dallas, when I decided that I'd be a preacher that no denomination was going to run. In 5 minutes, I made my decision. That night, I took the bus kids instead of the rich people. In 5 minutes, on my face in front of the Conrad Hilton Hotel in downtown Chicago at 6 o'clock one morning. 5 minutes. That's what I take from the rich people that morning. Just 5 minutes. Now listen carefully and through. Some of you look back with delight, like I do, and say and remember those periods, that 5 minute period here and there, when you had the courage to say no, and it charted your life for decency and right. But others of you look back with remorse. I'll tell you what folks are going to write tonight. They always do. Sometime between now and Wednesday night, there'll be notes under my door, and this is what they'll say. Brother Howells, if I could have heard that sermon when I was 16 years old. If I had some preacher who could have told me that when I was a teenager, it wouldn't have been like it's been. And that's why I haven't gotten used to these little pussy-footing, molly-coddling preachers that won't stand up and tell you the truth. Now, wait a minute. 5 minutes right now can change your life. 5 minutes right now can change your life. 5 minutes, young person, now can change your life. To decide in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to be clean. I'm going to be pure. I'm going to serve God. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Now can transform your entire life. Take the next 5 minutes. You said, Brother Hiles, I've already wrecked part of my life. Okay, 5 minutes can change the rest of it. There's nothing you can do about yesterday. You can't unwrite it. You can't undo it. But bless God, you can do something about tomorrow. And all the tomorrows. 5 minutes tonight can transform your life. With this, I close again. I dated the wrong girl. She was not what you'd call an immoral girl. She's the first real girlfriend I ever had. Her name was Mary Helen Hawes. She was a beautiful girl. She wanted to get me because I'd never dated before. And she wanted to be the first girl I dated. She was not the best girl in the church, nor the worst girl in the church. But she was not what I should have dated. And by the way, young ladies, don't get them and change them. And young men, don't get them and change them. Let them be changed for about a year and then consider them. Well, he's improved. Well, wait till he gets improved for about a year. I didn't understand it. Mrs. Howard, my high school superintendent, came by my house one day just walking by going to church. Our house is across the street from the church. She said, Jack, I'm praying for you. I said, what for? Pray for sinners. She said, you know what for. And I did know what for. It was my girlfriend. My girlfriend. Mr. Skeeter, one of our Sunday school teachers, walked by my house one day. He said, Jack, I'm praying for you. I said, what for? Pray for sinners. But I knew what for. And then one Sunday morning, I sat right back there in our church, seated 1,000 people. And God began to talk to me. And God got a hold of my life. And I walked down the aisle, and I still can remember what they were singing. Yes, Jesus took my burden I could no longer bear. Yes, Jesus took my burden in answer to my prayer. My anxious fears subsided, my spirit was made strong. For Jesus took my burden and left me with a song. You ever stop and think again? If I'd made the wrong decision in that 5 minutes? Or in the 5 minutes on senior day? Or in the 5 minutes in front of the Texas Theater? Where would some of you be tonight? You wouldn't have any buses to bring you to church. Every one of you would still be in the gangs. You wouldn't have anybody to care for you, the public schools. Now wait a minute. How about the people 40 years from tonight? Because of your decisions. You, Esau, walked in and said, I want a bowl of soup. And in 5 minutes of enjoyment and pleasure, he sold out himself, his unborn children, and a nation forever. There's more to it than just you. Well, it's my business, it's my life. First place, it's not your life. In the second place, it's not your business. And the third place, you're going to affect people unborn tonight according to the decision you make in your 5 minute time. Our Father, I pray tonight that you'd shake some sense in some people's heads. That college girl walking just inside the boundary. That college boy flaunting the rules. Comes to church and misbehaves. That high school boy. Our drive-in kids, our bus kids, our public school kids. Oh my God, tonight, help us to take 5 minutes and chart the course of a life. Amen. Shall we stand? The choir will sing.